Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We have two guests with us today, laser focused on identifying actions we can take at the local level to slow climate change. Morgan Edwards is one of our guests, an assistant professor at the UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. Her research and teaching focuses on human-centered energy responses to the climate crisis across policy-making scales. And Morgan, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you with us. With us as well, Stephanie Salgado is a member of the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change and co-founder of Wisconsin's Youth Climate Action Team, or YCAT. She's an undergraduate student studying environmental studies and political science at UW-Madison. And Stephanie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Have a good morning, and I'm glad to be here.
Great to have you with us. I hope you'll join in as you listen to our two guests with your own questions or comments about solving climate change. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Morgan, let's start with you. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and your role here at the UW.
Yeah, so my climate journey really started back when I was in high school, and it started at the individual level and then moved to the collective. So it started with something that was really visible to me in my community, and that was trash. So I became really involved with efforts first in my own family and then trying to get my high school to adopt an increased recycling. And while I was working on that, I ended up visiting a number of landfills and sort of realizing that these problems aren't just individual or even on a small scale, but they're a much broader collective. And I realized that a lot of landfills and other polluting infrastructure are disproportionately sited in Black and brown communities. And at the same time as I was starting to understand these energy and equity issues, I remember that my science courses didn't really discuss climate change at all. And if someone brought it up, the line was usually, you know, this is controversial, the science is uncertain, and let's not talk about it. And so that was back in 2005 or so, and misinformation on climate change was really high. But I remember thinking, you know, I need to learn more about this climate change thing. And since then, I've approached climate change from lots of different lenses. So I studied environmental science and economics at UNC, and then I went to MIT to study engineering and technology policy before moving to DC. And now I work on state and local climate action first in DC and then moved recently to Madison this fall.
Well, it's great that you're here at in Wisconsin and at UW. So thank you for that explanation. Stephanie, let's turn to you. You've already got a big background with climate change action. What makes you so passionate about creating change?
Actually, it goes the same along the same lines as Morgan. I first started in high school because when I was in high school, I had just moved from Honduras to the United States. So I was not really aware what climate change was. But at that moment, I knew there was something so prevalent and imminent of a problem that we had to address. And so sophomore year of high school, I said, you know what? There is no even such a green club at my high school. I will initiate it. So with the help of students, I got to, like, get together a group of students so we could all talk about initiatives. And the interesting thing was that it was mostly students of color. And so we definitely talk about intersectionality and how our identities was also overlapping in this whole issue of climate change. And as time progressed, we wanted to take more action, and that's how YCAT came about. We were so interested in starting the first climate strike here in Madison that we got students from La Follette, we got students from West High School, and even from East High School, and all around Madison, and we started setting down ideas, talking it out and saying, like, we know we are not of age students at the moment. We were like 16, 17, 18, but I do believe we can move this forward. And so within a few months of planning and a few good people who were adults, they helped us get us a permit. They helped us get in security there. And we did it successfully twice, two climate strikes here in Madison. And I was so grateful because not only did those experiences allow me as an immigrant to speak louder my words, knowing that I did have a broken English, but it also helped me land this opportunity with the lieutenant governor to be selected as the youngest member into the climate change task force. That was such a privilege in itself to be able to sit down with other policymakers and bring about new ideas to really start this conversation going on in Wisconsin.
That's just great. And your English is pretty darn good, if you ask me. What's it like to be the youngest member on that task force?
It was most certainly at some points very intimidating, just because I understood that my standpoint and what I have experienced could be limited compared to my other counterparts. But at the same time, it doesn't invalidate the experiences I have gone through. So, for instance, a lot of times we're talking about social justice and we will forget about our own communities of color here in Madison. And that's where I would jump in and talk about my experience and why I have interacted with them and why we can do better as policymakers to bring forward new ideas. And so, while it was intimidating at some points, I never let my light to be dimmed by others and instead provoke the conversation with many people as I can social network with.
Well, we already have a number of callers online. There's still one line open for you at 800-642-1234. But let's take a call. Bob in Mauston, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. Well,
hi, Bob.
I've watched climate change, and I have seen things but we do not have control over. I have seen days when 119 degrees weather and we was making hay and hauling peas. And I have seen days that in the middle of July we had frost. I have seen a foot of snow Memorial Day weekend. This is things that come and go. And on August 6th in 1986, at midnight here in Mauston, it was 94 degrees. Going back the last 5 years, there are a couple of these years that we've never had 96 degrees even during the daytime. So it's kind of hard for me to believe all of this. It is ideas, but knowledge is a whole lot different than education. And what I understand is that we have got ideas of what we're doing here, but what about going shooting rockets to the moon and so on? Doesn't that have a thing to do with our climate change when they have that much force? Another thing is, how much land is out here in blacktop roads? If you want to see what the temperature is, it can be 80 degrees. But if you put a thermometer out there in the middle of your blacktop road, it'll be close to 150 to 160. This is absorption of heat, and it will hold throughout the day and night. And the same
Bob,
thing goes with our roof.
Well, I think you're making your point well here. Let's get some comments from our guests. Morgan, comments on what Bob had to say.
Yeah, I think Bob brings up a lot of important points. And one is that the climate change problem is really complicated. So you mentioned, we see this trend of increasingly warmer summers, warmer winters, but we also see a lot of variation around that trend. And some of the most concerning impacts of climate change aren't just the steady warming, but the kinds of extreme weather events that we expect to see with increasing frequency as the climate changes. Rob also brought up a number of different potential solutions. And I think there that also speaks to there are lots of different ways that each of us can get involved with thinking about different solutions for climate change. At the same time, we know what some of the biggest levers are. And those are generally transitioning our energy systems and getting off fossil fuels. So that's where the majority of our emissions come from today. And so we know that that will need to be a part of the climate solution.
Yeah. Thanks again, Bob. Appreciate your call. Let's get Valerie in Green Bay involved here. Valerie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a suggestion for a really easy solution that almost everybody can participate in. And that is, if you're going to eat meat, I would just suggest you look up grass-fed meat. And that's a really great way that you can help sequester carbon in the soil. And that'll help keep climate change at bay. And it's pretty easy nowadays to find that on the internet. Like up in our Green Bay area, we have a little cooperative of farmers called Slow Farmers, and we market grass-fed beef. So there's lots of places around now you can find it, and that's my comment.
Well, thank you very much for calling. Morgan, I'll go back to you once more and then to Stephanie. Hi.
I think that's a fantastic idea. And here in Wisconsin, we also have the dairy industry, and there's lots of research happening at the University of Wisconsin about how to make that industry more climate friendly and reduce greenhouse gas emissions through all the stages of our farming system.
Yeah, absolutely. Stephanie, a comment?
Yes, for sure. I was just going to say along with the same lines with Morgan, that's a great idea for those people who can afford it. So if we could make that kind of food more accessible for people, that would be a great initiative to get on started.
You know, Morgan, there's a virtual event taking place on April 7th. I think it's from 7 to 8:15 in the evening, related to climate change that you'll be moderating at. And Stephanie, I think, is one of the speakers. Maybe give us a little background on that event before we go back to the phones.
That's right. So this coming April 7th, we'll be one of 100 universities in over 50 countries who are participating in the worldwide Solve Climate by 2030 event. And so this is a simultaneous global dialogue on concrete local actions to address the climate crisis. And so our event is hosted by the Wisconsin Energy Institute, and I'll be moderating the panel, and Stephanie will be a panelist. And we'll also have Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, who also chairs Governor Evers' Task Force on Climate Change. We'll have Dylan Jennings, who's a director of public information at the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, and also a former tribal council member with the Bad River Band, and Seth Hoffmeister, who's the organizing and political director for the Wisconsin Conservation Voters. And so in our conversation, we'll be taking questions from the audience, and we'll also be focusing on important actions that we can take in the state of Wisconsin and what actions each of us as individuals can take. And the goal is to gather lots of different ideas and perspectives from all over the world and then use these recordings in high school and college classes to jumpstart conversations about climate action.
That's pretty cool. How do people get involved in it?
So the event is free to register. You can go online at the Wisconsin Energy Institute and look for the Solve Climate by 2030 event page.
Solve Climate by 2030 event page at the Wisconsin Energy Institute.
That's right.
Okay. Well, maybe talk a bit more about this 10-year window.
So we know to avoid the worst effects of climate change that we need to act really rapidly. And scientists have told us that we really have a 10-year window to make significant progress on climate action. And so I think we've heard a lot about commitments that have been made in the long term to reduce climate change, and those are really important. But the 10-year window helps us focus on concrete things that we can do in the near term to jumpstart that progress.
Yeah. Stephanie, do you think climate change is an issue that's important to a lot of your peers? I know you said you didn't know much about it for a while until, you know, you got yourself active. But what do you think? Is it generally an issue of concern for your peers?
Most certainly. I believe that, just like Bob mentioned earlier, education is a powerful tool. So just the fact that I didn't know about climate change was a tactic for me to not know about what is coming for me later in my lifetime. You know, like, I will be around 30 when I'm, like, by 2030. And so, like, I will be in the middle of my lifetime, and who knows when we will have to be dealing with water scarcity. Who knows when we have to be dealing with heat waves and among many other issues. But I think that, like, young people can project themselves upon the future and realize that our future is not as secure as others. And for that reason, some of us can be experiencing, like, climate anxiety, which is the thought of, like, everything is just not going to be fixed. Everything's just going to go downhill. But that's not a feasible way to think forward, you know. Like, yes, the stats are there, and that's why we have to call for action from our policymakers to start and let them know that we are the adults in the room if you're not acting like the adults in the room. So I think it's a pretty prominent issue, and that young people could be involved, and they want to be involved, but only if you get educated at first.
Talking with our two guests today, Morgan Edwards, assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs, and Stephanie Salgado, a member of the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change and co-founder of Wisconsin's Youth Climate Action Team. Great to have them with us. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234 or email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Natalie Guyette's our producer today. Christina Myshock, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at climate change and what we can do about it at the local and state levels with our two guests, Morgan Edwards and Stephanie Salgado. Great to have them with us. Again, you can join in with your own thoughts on this at 1-800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jeff in Superior, we'll give you a chance now. Jeff, thanks for calling.
Thank you and good morning. I appreciate the opportunity. I honestly believe that, you know, it saddens me that the issues become somewhat political. Not everyone believes in climate change. But I think what you can unite us as Americans and as world citizens is the idea of pollution. We've made strides in our world to reduce pollution, but there's still pollution in our world. So in my opinion, one of the best way to bring people together on this issue is to use our efforts to recycle our resources. If we can recycle our resources, we can reduce pollution and we can reduce the effects of climate change. And I think that's the single most important thing we can do in our everyday consumer-based economy. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you very much for calling. We'll get comments from both our guests. Morgan, start with you.
Yeah, I think Jeff raises a really good point about understanding the local benefits of climate action. And one of those local benefits is reducing not just emissions of climate polluting greenhouse gases, but other kinds of local air pollutants that harm our health. And one of the advantages of focusing on action at the state and local level is that we can see those kinds of benefits happening directly in our communities.
And Stephanie, you want to join in?
For sure. I was just going to tackle that same point that he brought up about nonpartisanship. This is an issue that will affect both parties regardless of whatever that happens. So in a way that we can find unity and bring together ideas and work together towards a solution is the best way into actually solving climate change one step by one step.
Yeah. Well, how do you get people who don't see this as quite as an important an issue to pay attention? Stephanie, start with you and then maybe go to Morgan.
For sure. Of course, climate change seems as a big problem, which it is globally. However, if we can tackle it little by little and showing people how it is affecting their communities, is the most effective way to let them show and let them see how actually the consequences of bigger corporations and bigger actions are actually affecting them. And more importantly, if we talk about people of color or BIPOC communities, Black and Indigenous people have been talking about sustainability for the longest time. So for them to, you know, be on the front line and say, like, this is a prevalent issue and not us trying to pay attention to it, it's just another way we're trying to, you know, erase their history and trying to make them get, like, quieter. We need to actually, you know, project their ideas. We need to actually uplift them, because first and foremost, who is going to be affected the most will be BIPOC communities and developing nations. So, climate change seems as a big, big problem. But if we can bring people together and see that within their own community, they can make a difference through a community garden, through a protest, through just actually communicating to your legislator, like, I'm concerned about this issue. Is there any way we can probably divest? For instance, UW Medicine could probably divest. That just brings us together and realize that we can actually accomplish this goal that we have set on for all of us.
Yeah. Morgan, anything to add there?
I would just echo what Stephanie said. I think the importance of showing the impacts of climate change in our local communities, that's how a lot of people come on board and begin to understand the importance of addressing the climate crisis. And so not only showing the negative impacts of climate change, but also showing the benefits of climate solutions. And again, those are solutions, like Stephanie said, that are grounded in racial justice and social justice, and don't kind of look at climate change as an issue that's separate from all of the other issues that we care about in our communities. I'll also just add that, you know, we have seen a lot of partisanship on the issue of climate change across different levels of government, but actually among people, there's a lot of consensus developing on this subject. So according to the Yale Climate Opinion Survey, 78% of Wisconsinites think that we should teach about climate change and climate solutions in schools. And 75% of them support regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant. And even higher percentages support policies like investing in renewable energy and energy efficiency and energy research and development. So a lot of these solutions on the ground are actually quite popular, even as we do see some gridlock at the different governmental scales.
Yeah. How do you apply this in your own teaching?
One thing I try to do is show how climate change impacts many other issues. So when we're talking about, COVID and healthcare, we talk about the impacts of climate change. When we're talking about racial justice and policies to address discrimination, we think about the role that climate change might play, both in exacerbating some of these issues, but also as we think about climate solutions, looking to policies that can address many things that we care about simultaneously.
Let's take another call. Ron in Madison, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Thanks. Using our natural energy will help us phase out fossil fuels and nuclear much faster. In this Greater Lakes region, the ground and the water stores the coolness and the warmth year-round, and it's even better than the solar and the wind resources in this region. The new Discovery Center building on the UW campus is one example. They use vertical loops of plastic pipe with a water source heat pump system to warm and cool, heat and cool that building. Fond du Lac High School uses a closed loop system with the loops of plastic pipe in perhaps a 1 acre lake on their campus to heat and cool their building. A big success is the city of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. They have a 12-foot pipes. One brings in the cold water, bottom water from Lake Ontario, and they have a central heating district downtown with the big buildings. They added this lake water cooling to provide the air conditioning to all of those huge buildings. We can do the same with Milwaukee, Chicago, and even smaller cities that are connected to Lake Michigan and Superior. In 1984, my temporary job was to inventory the injection wells connected to water source heat pump systems. There were over 200 systems that I found. Not all of them were injection. Some were closed loop. The biggest one had 24 vertical loops, 200 feet deep, and it cooled a beer distributorship. My favorite cost $26. A guy bought a $6 salvage truck radiator and a $20 new window fan, bolted them together, pumped water out of his old hand-dug well, and cooled two rooms in his house. He didn't try to cool the entire thing, but having two cool rooms during the summer was enough for them, and it was extremely cheap to do. We can do it much cheaper than with nuclear and fossil fuel if we use the resources that are right here under our feet and in our lakes.
Well, Ron, I thank you very much for calling. Let's get some comments from our guest, Morgan. Let's start with you.
I think Ron brings up a great point, talking about heat pumps as a potential solution to our building heating and cooling needs. And so we talk a lot about our electricity system, and that's a really important element of the energy transition. So cleaning up our electric grid, cleaning up the sources of electricity that we use. But then we also need to think about other sectors of the economy. So thinking about our buildings, how we heat and cool our buildings, which right now is primarily with natural, the heating is primarily with natural gas. I'm also thinking about transportation, so ways to electrify transportation. And I think some of the individual projects that Ron was talking about, you know, that's exactly the kind of thing that we're interested in hearing about at the Solve Climate by 2030 event. So what's actually being implemented on the ground and what works?
Stephanie, a comment?
I was just going to echo what Morgan said. She, like, completely got it. But the fact that actually, you know, renewable energy is becoming cheaper is just a great point and great segue for us to move forward, you know, and bring the solution that, as he said, you know, that are so much cheaper and more community-based rather than big corporations that we have right now. You know, we have to move forward and do it small scale.
Ron, thanks again. Appreciate that call. And perhaps you'll take part in that event that's coming up on April 7th from 7 to 8:15 on climate change and things we can do. I hope you do. Again, that's go to the Wisconsin Energy Institute, right, Morgan?
That's right.
And then look for, what's the title?
Solve Climate by 2030.
Solve Climate by 2030. Okay. Let's take another call. Mike in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for the morning. Wonderful guest.
Thank you.
Is there a little lag I'm just wondering if you have any latency in the signal that I can hold up on what I say. But anyway, one of the guests mentioned something about education and how they take the stronger terms referring to global warming or even any references to global warming out of the pedagogy so that students aren't really being educated to what's going on. And that's a result of a long time conservative effort to change what our kids are taught in school. And I think now that we have a most people consider him a liberal governor, we need to really start speaking out about changing the terminology we use when we're referring to some of these sciences and have a sense of urgency in that how we're teaching kids. There's a gentleman, a professor at, I think, the University of Toronto. His name is Henry Giroux, G-I-R-O-U-X. And he talks about critical pedagogy. He formulated that with another educational philosopher. But and it talks about how we learn throughout our lifetime from birth to the grave and how we're taught, whether it's through the media, through our parents, and so on and so forth, and how we can start talk. I think if we want to learn how to teach others and formulate a global strategy to inform the planet, I think Henry Giroux would be a very interesting guest to have on. So anyway, I just wanted to suggest that, and thank you for this program.
Well, thanks very much for calling. Any comment, Morgan?
I would just echo that I think that's exactly right, that we need to be prioritizing teaching climate change in our schools. And part of this initiative with the Solve Climate by 2030 is to make climate change a class. And I think that's really important, thinking about how we can teach about climate change, but also building climate change into all the other classes that we're taking. So when I was in college, you know, climate change was something that maybe you learned about in your environmental science class, but we didn't talk about it in economics or in political science or our art classes. But I think it's really important to think about how we can bring climate change and understand how it connects to other issues. So bring it into many different parts of our curriculum.
Yeah. Stephanie, did you have it as a part of your curriculum in high school and now in college?
Same thing with Morgan. In high school, I learned it actually by taking an advanced placement class called Environment. And so that's when I really started, you know, going deep into what climate change was and all the other systems it was affecting. And then once in college, actually, I would definitely say that UW Medicine has been a great way to, like, incorporate climate change in a lot of courses. So I've received, some teachings of climate change through English, through some poli sci classes, and even some, like, art classes. And I was really, like, shocked because I was not expecting this, but it's a great way for people to, you know, start grasping this whole idea of climate change being so big, but it also, like, it affects every single field of what we think about. More into that, just like education for young people to understand and we can all be on the same page is so critical, because if we actually want to mobilize and move forward ideas, how are we going to, you know, expect people to understand this when they haven't even been taught about this? And that's why we have to, you know, educate our public and let them know about the true bare fact that we shouldn't sugarcoat anymore.
Talking today with our two guests, Stephanie Salgado and Morgan Edwards, about climate change and what we can do locally, let's talk some more about the local aspect of this, Morgan. What are some things that you talk with people about? I think we need this sort of basic education, and it needs to be part of our regular curriculum in both high school, well, probably grade school, high school, and college, as a matter of fact. And I think that it seems to be happening. But if you were going to talk to somebody right now and say, well, what can I do today to help our climate, what would you tell them?
I would tell them to find the actions that feel most meaningful to them and that are connected to the other things that they're passionate about. So if you're an artist, make art about climate change. If you're a teacher, you can teach about it. If you're interested in policy, you can work towards policy change. I think the best way to get involved first is the way connecting climate change to the other issues that resonate with you.
Yeah, I think that's very good advice. I want to go back to that virtual event, because I think it's important for people to understand about it. Some people may be tuning in late. Let's go over this virtual event that's taking place on April 7th. Tell us about it again.
That's right. So on April 7th, from 7 to 8:15 p.m., the Wisconsin Energy Institute is hosting a dialogue called Solve Climate by 2030. And we're part of a network of 100 different universities in 50 countries who are having a simultaneous global dialogue on concrete local actions that we can take to address the climate crisis. So here we'll be focusing on what actions we can take in the state of Wisconsin and what actions each of us can take as individuals. And the goal is to gather a lot of different ideas and perspectives, both from a group of great panelists and from Collins from the audience, and use these recordings in high school and college classes to jumpstart conversations about climate action.
Will there be some attempt to sort of gather in the information from all of those universities, or how will that work?
Yeah, all of the recordings are going to be published, and it'll be interesting to see the different ways in which we summarize and aggregate all that information together. But yes, the goal is to create a kind of comprehensive list of different ideas for tackling the climate crisis.
And Stephanie, you're on that that panel that's discussing it. What do you intend to address or stress?
I think, one, identities. So it would be the fact that I'm a young person, probably on the panel, the youngest one, mm-hmm. if I think about it. Secondly, how climate change affects, people of color and BIPOC communities, and how we have to, like, start on the conversation, because a lot of us don't understand, you know, that climate justice really means racial justice. And secondly, I would just, you know, encourage people to mobilize, you know, mobilize others, like, let's go to this one protest, let's contact our legislators, let's make that a thing, you know, to move forward into the future and actually start bringing on action.
And I'm guessing, Morgan, that you need to register, even though it doesn't cost anything, but you need to register probably in order to get the links and all that?
That's right. So if you go to the Wisconsin Energy Institute website, you can register for free anytime up till the start of the event.
Okay, and go to the Wisconsin Energy Institute website, and then there's a subhead that you'll see, Solve Climate by 2030, and that's the place to click?
That's right, under our events.
Under events, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with both of you today. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. I hope we get lots of people involved in it and lots of people in that virtual event. Morgan, Stephanie, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you
great
so much.
Great to have you both with us. Stephanie Salgado, member of the Governor's Task Force on Climate Change and co-founder of the Wisconsin Youth Action Climate Committee. So it's great to have her with us, and Morgan Edwards, assistant professor at the UW-Madison's La Follette School of Public Affairs. It'll be really interesting to see how this turns out. And you know what? Climate will still be on our minds here because coming up next, our weather guys are back, and we'll talk spring weather with them, but we'll also get into climate, I'm sure. So stay with us. The weather guys coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.